friends, and cherished companions of the cosmos, I bid you all a warm greeting for today's sermon. All across the galaxy, near every species is subjected in some way to the abject horrors of reality, and their responses to these feelings of untold dread can take many forms. If any of you are feeling worn or exhausted by these feelings yourselves, know that you are not alone, and through our bond we shall emerge, resolute against the dark, and stronger than we ever thought was previously possible. The loyal and faithful servants of the Emperor will most often find solace in their quiet worship and reverence to his divine glory, with peace being achieved through meditating on his magnificent achievements, all of which propelled humanity outwards and into the stars. On the other hand, the minions of the dark gods will revel in the understanding that there is a dimension of pain and suffering which simply waits to bubble over into reality, where it will swallow all who fall under its abyssal tide. The orcs care not for foolish revelations such as this. They have figured out the true nature of our reality, and they know that the sole purpose to life is to fight and to win. The Tau are content to spread the word of the greater good throughout the vast expanse, simply to unite the willing species of the galaxy, in the hopes that we may work together to bring a new, brighter dawn to all who dance within the fading light of the stars. The ancient Eldari, who cursed their own kind and robbed their kin of everything they once held, may seem to be in a dire strait, but they too have found purpose. All they now seek is to protect and conserve their peoples, clinging to life aboard the great craft worlds, within maiden worlds, or out within the void, where they spend each moment living in the ghostly shadow of their now extinct civilization. But we must ask ourselves, what would be the response of a soulless machine to witnessing the forbidden truths of life? Perhaps they would be more understanding than us, or maybe they would find some new insights which the flawed biology of natural-born mortals could never hope to achieve. Alternatively, however, what would happen if the ancient automata peeled back the layers of reality, and instead of ascending into a higher level of understanding, they were only greeted by a deafening silence? What if these machines of living metal were met with no answers to the great questions which have forever plagued the sentient species of the galaxy, and rather, they were met by an ever-gnawing darkness, so Stygian that it snuffed out any aspirations they ever held to continue in this endless march of life? Perhaps they would resolve to simply power down their systems, no longer finding any purpose to continue trudging endlessly across the cosmos, with their new lives being so bereft of meaning. Whilst no response to this nihilistic viewpoint can be seen as positive, it is rather unfortunate for us that the species in question today have instead resolved to take a far more destructive and insidious response to their cold discovery. When the Necrons become afflicted by these irreconcilable doubts to their purpose in life, they are considered to have succumbed to a condition known as the Destroyer Curse, and this is to be our topic for today. It is most tragic that a species as venerable and ancient as the Necrons can lose themselves to the dark in this way, where they seek to only drag all other life forms into the abyss with them, from where the great gift of life will be snuffed out, leaving naught but empty husks littered throughout the stars. Scattered across the galaxy, there are untold thousands of unassuming worlds, which upon first glance would appear to be rather typical or unremarkable when compared with some of the grander or more unique of planetary forms. With that being said, however, we would be most foolish to overlook these worlds, for they are said to harbor a dark secret deep beneath their muddy surfaces. Slumbering within these humble planets of barren rock, we will find the final remaining vestiges of the Necron race. These are ancient robotic entities who in their heyday ruled supreme over the galaxy, having wrangled control of the very stars themselves to propel them into their unmatched position of power. But they were not born as sentient machines, and instead, in their archaic past, they once walked within their territories as beings of flesh and blood. Their bodies, however, were incredibly meek and feeble when compared to those of the stronger species of the galaxy. They were afflicted with terrible diseases which racked their civilization to the point where they were utterly desperate to find a solution to their plight, and so they sought out the secrets of immortality from the very gods themselves. 60 million standard Terran years ago, the High Lords of the Necrons entered into a bargain with the fabled star gods known as the Catan, where they learnt of the secrets needed to shed their ailing carcasses of sickly flesh, choosing instead to take up a new frame of living metal. This process, known as the biotransference, finally solved the single inescapable truth of life, in that death is an inevitability which will one day come for us all. As for the Necrons, they were now seen as truly immortal beings who could outlast the stars themselves. With that being said, however, there was a dark and terrible cost to this arrangement, and it was that the Necrontyr had unwillingly been tricked into giving up their very souls. Whilst, yes, they had ascended as eternal and undying entities, casted into magnificent frames of self-repairing necrodermis, but they were cursed to harbor an everlasting hollowness within the depths of their very being. In their newly perfected, yet innately empty existence, they were successful in finding victory within the mythical war in heaven, where they freed themselves from the oppressive yoke of the Catan and extinguished the arrogant old ones from the galaxy. But despite this success, there was clearly no peace to be found within the stars. Psychic species such as the Eldari or the Enslavers had risen into a position of prominence which threatened the delicate Necron Empire, which at this point was still reeling from the great costs endured during the aforementioned war. Because of this, the Silent King Zarek decreed that the entire species should excavate and reform their great planets into becoming tomb worlds. These would be cavernous labyrinths which held within them millions of stasis chambers from where the Necrons could enter into a long hibernation and wait out for the downfall of these fledgling fools. Once it was time to awaken, they could emerge from their crypts, catching the upstart species of the galaxy completely unawares, and with their undying legions, they would once again reclaim their celestial throne. Now, in the 41st millennium, the Necron race has only just recently began to reawaken from this long slumber. Worlds, star systems, and sectors have been plunged into chaos, as the many gleaming phalanxes of warriors march out from their stasis chambers, ready to purge their ancient territories from all traces of biological life, which foolishly thought they could lay claim to the dynastic holdings of the Necrons. Given that their species stretched across the entire breadth of the galaxy during their zenith, it is no wonder that some of the technological tools and artifacts kept upon their worlds would vary quite wildly in quality. For instance, the stasis chambers were somewhat inconsistent in their production. The High Lords and nobles of the various dynasties would be graced with the finest of crypts, which would faultlessly endure the long march of time. This meant that these individuals could stride out from hibernation in a perfectly preserved state with their necrodermis armor gleaming just as brightly as it once did during their war in heaven. Other Necrons, however, were not so fortunate to be blessed with such chambers. The common subservient class were entombed within functional yet unremarkable stasis crypts, which, rather sadly, were significantly less reliable at withstanding the passing ages. Because of this, as time has endlessly trundled onwards, some of the Necrons within these lesser chambers were not destined to emerge from their chambers completely unscathed. Whilst, yes, their bodies may appear to be untouched by time, but it is within their minds where the faults have blossomed. Remaining sentient and functional for 60 million years is no small task, even for a species as advanced as the Necrons, and many have felt the weathering effects of this protracted slumber. For the unfortunate individuals who entered into stasis within faulty or subpar chambers, some have awoken with their minds having been utterly ravaged by time, leaving them in a constant state of mental anguish. And these are the destroyers. The noble dynastic rulers were always to be interned within stasis crypts, which had been built up as individual masterworks, with such perfected internal mechanisms that they would likely be able to endure for another 60 million years if it was so required. Thanks to this, the physical frames and minds of the lords were almost always perfectly preserved during the long slumber. Although I should quickly note that calamities could still strike them during their sleep. There are well-known cases of mighty Faerons succumbing to their own deaths due to dysfunctional tombs. However, today we are far more interested in those who lost their minds rather than their lives. For the lesser dynastic followers, kept within mass sarcophagi, it was not uncommon for certain aspects of their being to become damaged due to faulty stasis equipment not operating at a functional level for the entirety of their hibernation. This could be due to the actual tomb complexes being forced to run at a reduced power output, or even from quakes and tremors shaking the foundations of the world itself, leading to mechanical damage within the very stasis chambers. But regardless of the cause, this damage would always accumulate within the Necrons to varying degrees. Some would awaken with their bodies being somewhat disjointed or malformed. However, this could often be resolved thanks to the astonishing properties of their living metal frames. Similarly, their sensory systems could have been affected, leading to the Necron being forced to live on with a dampened capacity for perceiving the world. But there is a far worse fate which awaited some of the most unfortunate of their species. It is one thing for a Necron to emerge from stasis with a damaged body, as they can still function to the best of their abilities and follow in the directives of their ruling lord. With that being said, however, it is an entirely different case when one awakens with a ravaged mind. The Necrons known as destroyers are those who have awoken with their bodies perfectly intact, though their psyche has been almost entirely shattered. Time has consumed and desecrated what once existed as their vibrant and unique mental state, leaving a Necron who feels even more soulless than any of his fellow kin. They almost universally fall into a state of rage, fueled by the realization of their existence being utterly meaningless. For what could be the point of continuing in their endless struggles of life if they now stand bereft of a soul? It may seem confusing, since even the Necron overlords will admit that they themselves did not awaken with an intact soul. But for the destroyers, parts of their decayed minds have become so locked and so fixated upon their soullessness that they inevitably fall into a state of pure nihilism. To some degree, most Necrons aspire towards a singular goal, and that is to once again reclaim their physical bodies of flesh, all in the hopes that it may somehow grant them back with their lost souls. It is in fact the ultimate goal of the Silent King Sarek, who has recently returned to the galaxy from his self-imposed exile, to discover the necessary methods for achieving this near impossible task. Unfortunately, however, due to the ever-devouring hordes of Tyranids which have swarmed our stars as a ravenous plague, his goal may very well become unachievable. And so he has resolved to combat the extra-galactic invaders purely to preserve the tenuous future of his ancient species. With that being said, however, not all Necrons share in this desire. For the Destroyers, they have lost all purpose in life, and for them, existence no longer has any real meaning. They have no dreams nor aspirations of returning to that prior state of biological life. And even their current metallic state seems most disgusting to them. They no longer believe nor wish to feel the touch of grass beneath their feet and the hopes that their new lungs will be filled with the bountiful gift of fresh air died long ago with their decrepit psyches in the depths of their tomb worlds. Instead of these dreams, they believe that all they have left is their frame of necrodermis, which stands as their physical jail, in which no soulful prisoner lies. Because of their absence of hope in ever returning to their biological existence, they have become entirely fixated upon two primary beliefs. Firstly, they are consumed with an ideal of self-preservation. Though they have seemingly lost everything, they do have one thing left to cling on to, and this would be their physical form. Even if they have no desires or hopes left to see the next morning's rising sun, many of their kind will still wish to protect themselves, and they will simply not tolerate anything which may endanger their final possession. This brings us to their second obsession, and that would be focused upon their grim artistry of death. For these individuals, absolutely everything related to their existence becomes tainted by the constant offensives inflicted onto them by the remaining biological species of the galaxy. Seeing a living organism is akin to a personal affront to the Destroyers, and to flaunt your colorful and dynamic lives against these soulless machines is something which only warrants one response: death. It is not enough for a Destroyer to simply find solace in killing the sentient species which they encounter, and in fact, it is merely the presence of life which offends them to such a degree. Because of this, when a group of Destroyers descend onto a planet, they will seek to eradicate absolutely every single trace of life which they can uncover, and they will only depart once the world has been left as an utterly barren rock. They will begin with the higher species, first choosing to exterminate any sentients who have laid claim to this world as their home. After these foolish pests have been dealt with, they will turn upon the apex predators and other creatures which may pose a threat to them whilst they carry out their deathly task. Once each and every hazard has been felled, then their plans will become far more nefarious. The Destroyers will not be content to simply kill these larger species, as even the presence of plant life will be too much for them to bear. Grasslands, forests, and jungles will be reduced to ash under the great arcs of gas fire. And even the great lakes of a world will be boiled away, leaving the remaining traces of aquatic life to simply dry up and desiccate under the heat of the sun. But even these traces of life cannot be permitted to remain. Insects, fungi, or microorganisms could potentially spring up in these beds of decomposition, and so the departed remains of any creature will similarly have to be disintegrated. It is only once there is absolutely no trace of life left that they will be satisfied, but they will simply move on to another world, ready to purge it of its inhabitants, all to end this great affront of existence. I should note that whilst the destroyer curse can afflict any Necron, there are some tendencies and patterns towards who is the most likely to be affected. Typically, it seems that those who have fallen to become destroyers will have emerged from slightly higher rankings within Necron society, and so it is not uncommon to find their members having originated from the Lich Guard or Immortal Units. Their previous ranks, while somewhat vaunted, especially when compared to the common chattel warriors, may very well have been the causative agent behind why they succumbed to their new fate. This is highly speculative, but when we look at the actual necrodermis bodies of the Necrons, we must understand that there are significant differences between the frames of those from different social classes. Warriors were provided with unremarkable bodies which only possessed limited neural circuits when compared to that of a finer frame. Because of this, some of the mental degradation which would have occurred during the long sleep will not have affected them as much, since they were always going to be reliant on more primitive commands, and their capacity for awareness on their state of existence was somewhat non-existent. Within the higher castes, however, such as for the Lich Guard, they were entombed with more complete neural pathways, meaning that they would be all too cognizant of that which they lost during their hibernation. Thus, thanks to their increased capacity for thought, they would be cursed to fully understand the horrors of their new existence, and it is from this corruption that the destroyer curse would flourish. This is only a theory, however, but it would explain why we do not see so many of the destroyers having emerged from the phalanxes of common warriors. But it is a mystery which we may never know the true answer to. With that being said, however, I should note that we do in fact see members from every class falling to the destroyer curse. And so, no matter if you are a lowly warrior or a lofty overlord, you may still lose your mind. The madness which afflicts the destroyers is utterly destructive, and there is no known cure for those who have fallen to its dark grips. There is a common fear that the destroyer curse is in some ways contagious, and that the presence of a destroyer will put an entire tomb at risk of falling to the same fate. The damned Necrons will be exiled and banished to outcasted lands far away from the primary tomb complexes, as the more well-preserved of Necrons will want to distance themselves as much as possible from these poor, demented murderers. Out in the abandoned and forgotten corners of a world, the destroyers will group together within ancient caves or crumbling fortresses, where they will be led by the insidious figures known as Destroyer Lords, and they will put their crumbling minds together to plan out a new method for exterminating all life within the galaxy. In some ways, it seems that the destroyers see their physical frames as being the final remaining echoes of their prior state of life. Some of them are aware of the fact that their minds have been irreversibly damaged, to the point where they will never regain their individuality again. But the one thing which they can now protect is their body, and they will do whatever they can to preserve it from the many horrors and dangers of the galaxy. Because of this, they will seek to adapt their lives in such a way that every part of their being will have become entirely optimized towards allowing them to steal away the lives of every disgusting biological creature which they have the misfortune of encountering. They will attempt to clamber out of their dark pit of despair, by augmenting their bodies to better fit their newfound purpose of inflicting death upon any who may endanger them. And this can result in them taking on some wildly different physiological forms. One of the most striking of changes which has been encountered will be found within those named as locust destroyers. These Necrons, typically former immortals, will choose to replace their legs with a large platform equipped with an anti-gravity repulsion unit, which allows them to hover and race across a planet's surface purely for the betterment of hunting down anything which still lives and flees from their advance. These agents of destruction will then fuse a large Gauss cannon to their arm, forever trading in their ability to better interact with the wider world with an ever-improved ability to kill and burn. In addition to this weapon, they will augment their remaining senses into a state where they are far more accurate and precise than any of their lesser warrior kin. This provides them with an incredible ability to predict an enemy's movement and to adjust their aim in order to strike down their foes, no matter of the evasive maneuvers that a fleeing survivor may take. These changes do, however, come with a hefty cost. Augmenting oneself in this manner will oftentimes remove any final fleeting remnants of emotive memory within their minds, meaning that the destroyers will be simply pushing themselves further into their pit of despair. Once they have taken on too many of these mechanical enhancements, they risk falling over a threshold from where they will become naught but mindless killing machines, barely capable of even coherent speech with other Necron forces. There is an alternate variant of their kind, who are known as the Locust Heavy Destroyers. As the name implies, they are noticeably larger than their typical kin, having been augmented with much more energetic power conduits which run along their metallic spines. This power is required for the immense weaponry which will be fused onto their frames. For example, heavy Gauss destructors act as amplified versions of the typical Necron Gauss weapons, in that it will rip apart the molecular bonds which hold a target together, atomizing them into a field of errant particles to be cast away into the winds. Weapons as large as these will require extra limbs to hold and operate, and so the heavy destroyer variants will have been modified with a larger torso, equipped with four arms to effectively control the hefty bulk of their new armaments. Not all destroyers will choose to mount themselves upon a frame such as this. Those known as Scorpec destroyers will have eschewed the use of ranged weaponry, seeing it as tasteless, and they will instead relish in the tortuous art of vicious melee combat. Oftentimes these individuals will have been former members of the Lich Guard, who have now become obsessed with the extermination of all life throughout the galaxy. They will stand upon three long and powerful legs, which they will use to scuttle and gallop their way across a battlefield, easily being able to vault and clamber across even the most rough or seemingly impassable of terrain. Once they have descended into an enemy battle line, then it is here that all hell will break loose. Utilizing their immense hyperphase blades, they will violently eradicate all traces of life which they have fallen upon, rending huge arcs of crimson blood with each magnificent slice. Thanks to their surprisingly lithe frames, they will be able to pirouette and twirl about in a homicidal dance of death where the destroyers themselves are almost impossible to strike, yet their own brutally precise blows will always be sure to find their murderous mark. No Necron is safe from succumbing to the destroyer curse, and death marks can also find themselves afflicted with the condition, where they will adapt themselves from precise assassins into the many armed horrors known as hex marks. No longer satisfied with the death they may reap with but a single rifle. They will augment their frame with several new limbs, all equipped with the ghastly weapons known as Enmitic Disintegrator pistols. When fired, they will send out an energy pulse which forces the constituent atoms of their target to be violently pushed apart from one another, causing their victim to simply fall into a pile of assorted dust. Being former Deathmarks, these destroyers have retained their ability to teleport and drop down into their own pocket dimension, meaning that they may burst forth behind enemy lines, striking with extreme ferocity against the most unawares of foes. Similarly to the Scorpex, they will rapidly scuttle around on their three mechanical legs, sprinting and spinning about to eliminate every unfortunate enemy who found themselves opposed to this maddened and frenzied assassin. The final form of destroyers which have been recorded by Imperial scholars would be the Ophidians. Most within the dynasties are rather wary of destroyers, since they themselves do not wish to become afflicted by the same nihilistic condition. But even amongst their ranks, they are more so disgusted by the vile Ophidians than of any other variant. These maniacal Necrons will have made a series of horrific modifications to their bodies, choosing to model themselves in a manner more similar to the autonomous Canoptech wraiths. They will slither about on their long, intercalated metal tails, which many Necrons will see as being insulting, since it is so far removed and animalistic when compared to the ancient bodies of flesh which they once possessed. But despite the general negative perception of these tails, they are in fact rather useful. The Ophidians will use them to rapidly move within dugout tunnels, being able to pull themselves through even the smallest of gaps to reach an enemy position. It is important to note here that these destroyers will be somewhat similar to the Deathmarks, in that they too can appear out of a pocket dimension, although they will typically choose to manifest themselves underground, beneath their targeted encampment. From here, they will claw and rend their way to the surface, violently pulling themselves out from even ferrocrete foundations, where they will eviscerate any poor fools who made their existence known to the Ophidians. In some ways, these destroyers will mirror some aspects of the reviled flayed ones, in that they will possess incredibly long claws, and with these, combined with their hyperphase reap blades and threshers, they have been seen to hack, slash, and rip apart entire squads worth of pathetic mortals in mere seconds. Whilst I have previously made reference to the more subservient or common of Necrons succumbing to the destroyer curse, I would be remiss to not point out that the noble leaders and Pharaons have also been found to be susceptible to falling into this deathly fate. Even the advanced stasis chambers of the lords were prone to failing, and so some of these dynastic leaders have emerged with the same innate hatred for life that is shared with some of their lesser kin. With that being said, however, their bodies and neural circuits were always constructed to be far superior to that of the chattel followers, and so the destroyer curse manifests itself in a most fascinating way. Their engrammatic pathways and memories will often be rather well preserved. And while some of you may think that this makes them less afflicted by the disorder, you would in fact be wrong. Retaining only a portion of their memories only makes the stinging pain of losing their soulful purpose in life all that much worse, since they can cling to their faded and corrupted thoughts of a bygone age where they once awoke with ambition and drive filling their hearts. But now, all that they have left is an acute awareness of their horrific condition. Furthermore, the advanced neural frameworks of the Lords, in addition to being more resilient to the degradative effects of the curse, also means that they will have retained much of their tactical acumen, making them that much more of a terrible threat to all life in the galaxy. Though ravaged, they can still piece together complex plans, meaning that they can appropriately scheme and orchestrate a battle plan, all of which will be dedicated towards exterminating whatever disgusting dregs of sentience they come across. These lords, being afflicted by their maddening hatred, are known to inflict some truly horrifying atrocities against the living species of the galaxy. It is not uncommon to hear stories of them taking prisoners from their enemies, not out of a sense of honor, but simply to use them as a lure, all to call forth more desperate foes who thought they could save their kin. But they will only meet with their deaths once they encounter the tainted lord. Though the destroyers tend to be somewhat feral and single-minded, they will in fact listen to the orders and directives of a fellow destroyer lord. This means that the nobles who have succumbed to their fate as a destroyer will still be able to retain some semblance of command over their subservience, although it is shockingly rare to find uncorrupted Necrons who would ever follow in the orders of a destroyer lord if there was a non-cursed noble present. Destroyer lords can adapt their frames much in the same way as their lesser kin, choosing to arise as locusts or scorpex. Thus far, we have not encountered an Ophidian destroyer lord throughout the galaxy, but only time will tell if one of these terrible and horrific machines ever rises from the depths of their tomb. With all of their hatred for life, and with their lack of desire towards reclaiming their bodies of flesh, the destroyers are left in a curious situation where they are greatly at odds with the wishes and goals of their more mentally preserved kin. The overlords and dynastic rulers see the destroyers as having too willingly embraced their new state of cursed existence, and they simply cannot relate or sympathize with their lack of ambition towards ever resolving their affliction. As I had previously stated, let us remember that many of the Necrons today will wish to find a method of reversing the biotransference, where they will return their consciousness once again into a biological body, all in the hopes that they may be blessed once more with the gracious ownership of a true soul. But clearly, the destroyers do not share in this desire. Their ruined engrammatic pathways are so corrupted that they can't even comprehend that some of their kin would seek to abandon their metallic frames, choosing instead to adopt a feeble body of disgusting flesh. There is a commonly held fear within some of the aristocratic nobles of the Necrons, who believe that if they do in fact achieve their ultimate goal of reversing the biotransference, that the destroyers will see this as too great of an affront, and that they will end up turning upon their kin to exterminate them. This suspicion of a potential civil war occurring in the future is part of the reason why the destroyers are exiled, since who can really be certain as to whether or not they are aiding with a lord, or if they are somehow attempting to prevent them from achieving their goal of abandoning their metal-entombed bodies. With that being said, many cunning Necron overlords will plan out their campaigns in order to attract the attention of the destroyers. If a battle seems that it will be rather appealing to the deathly exiles, then they will emerge from their outcasted lairs to join in with the rampant destruction. Once within a battle, they will not concern themselves with complex battle plans or with the multi-layered tactics of their kin. Instead, choosing to simply charge forward, utilizing their highly optimized frames to simply eviscerate and annihilate whatever foul traces of life they encounter. Whilst you would be correct to state that the destroyers have been driven to utter madness, they do in fact have a certain methodology for how they engage themselves within a battle. Bursts of Gauss cannon fire will be launched in unified salvos, shredding huge swathes of enemy forces with an impressively lethal level of efficiency. Similarly, groups of destroyers may combine their cannon fire to sweep it through the ranks of their enemies, reducing entire platoons' worth of soldiers into stray fields of atoms, torn apart in a single agonizing moment. On the eve of a huge battle, a lord may unify several groups of destroyers into a group known as the Host of the Red Harvest. This cadre will contain dozens of combined destroyer units. However, it has been scarcely encountered upon the battlefields of the galaxy. Only in truly apocalyptic scenarios will a lord be able to attract enough destroyers to join in their campaign. But this is most fortunate for the feeble species of the galaxy, who will rue the day that they stepped into a conflict with the ancient Necrons. In any case, once assembled, the many groups of destroyers will combine their beams of Gauss fire into a single reinforced strike, known to be so powerful that these cadres have been witnessed to reduce even mighty Imperial Titans down into ruined hulks of slag. It is rather tragic that these once proud and vibrant individuals have succumbed to such a state where they only seek to preserve their living metal cage through violent acts of bloodshed. With that being said, however, it is the sad truth that time ravages all, and none are to be spared from his relentless advance through the ages. Some suspect that the destroyer curse was actually placed upon the Necron species by one of the ancient Catan as revenge for their treacherous attack during the war in heaven. This would mirror the Flayer virus, which was first placed upon the members of the Maenarch dynasty by Landugor the Flayer in his final moments before death. Alas, we will likely never know if there is a similar cause to be found for those who have fallen as destroyers. As I had previously stated, it may simply be an inevitable possibility for the Necrons who become damaged and corrupted over the years, and maybe this is a fate which will come to claim even the Silent King himself if he survives long enough. With this, however, we shall come to our end. Whilst horrifying, we must hope and pray that we never come to encounter such an entity of destruction and such a herald of oblivion as a destroyer, for they will surely spell the ends of our lives. Dearest citizens, I hope that you keep yourselves safe and that you will return again to hear of another sermon. My best wishes to each and every one of you.